Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is an integrative health-oriented concept that considers all the answers that we look for reside inside. It is by reaching inside that we can live healthy, happy lives. Those who resonate with this concept have been writing back and contacting each other, with whom we are starting a loving and caring worldwide community of like-minded souls. A company under the same name has been created in Peru to help sustain both the concept and the community. We believe in broadening minds and lessening frontiers, for it's not about where we are based, but about remembering we are all inner healers. My name is Luciana Stiglic. I'm a healer, teacher, and founder of Inner Healers in Peru. I will be your host for today. And as you might already know, this is a very special day for us. We are celebrating Inner Healers' birthday. On this very special date, we are honored and very happy to have Tony Saar Petrinovic as a guest in our Inner Healers Radio. Tony is a master teacher with a ministerial doctorate in metaphysics who instructs spiritual seekers how to see, hear, understand, and express from their core through their heart the voice of their soul. As a master teacher, Tony is absolutely committed to assisting all spiritual seekers around the globe remember they are source in form in this incarnation. Through the principles of metaphysics, the expanding language of quantum physics, and sacred etheric initiations, she literally opens the doorway to see the unseen and live the soul's desire in this dimension. Tony started to have spontaneous memories of her life as Sarah, daughter of Mary the Magdalene and Joshua ben Joseph, and we will now ask her to please help us see Jesus for what he was, a wonderfully wise spiritual teacher outside religion who came to show us what love was really about. Join us in this unraveling talk about our own Christ consciousness. Hello, Tony.
Hi, happy birthday. Is it 1 year, 2 years? How many years have you been on?
Actually, we started in 2005, but we only went worldwide on 2008. So we're actually celebrating our worldwide initiation, which is 2 years now.
Isn't that wonderful? Congratulations. What an on-taking thing that is. That's just beautiful. Super.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're so very happy, and we're actually very happy to have you here today with us. So because all the things that you've been teaching us so far are so important for us, that we're very happy that it's you today in our show.
Well, thank you very much. I know you wanted to talk about Sarah, the daughter of Jesus, so we'll kind of start with that, and then we'll get off of that and kind of talk about Christ consciousness as it expresses in everybody else, because this show is not about me. This show is about the listeners. Sarah came to me in pieces, and I'm in the process of writing a book about her life story. I've got half of it done, and the other half hopefully will be done next year. And I keep saying that, and it keeps getting put off for very good reasons of my classes, my teaching, or whatever I'm doing. So I know that there's more that's supposed to come. Otherwise, it would be done by now, because I write all the time. So there's something else that's going to be coming up, and I'm just waiting for that. The pieces that came to me were spontaneous. I didn't seek this out. I didn't sit down and say, you know, I wonder if I'm this person or that person. I would be, say, driving down a road, and all of a sudden I wouldn't be driving down the road anymore. I would be in Jerusalem, and I'd be experiencing something completely different than what the Tony body was doing. And I wrote all this down and made sure I took, you know, care to document it all, because it was very, very real. And I didn't know what it meant. It wasn't as though I went into a different reality and someone said, this is who you are. It would just be like going into a different reality. You're in someone's body and you're doing something, but you don't know what the environment, the other pieces of the environment, what it means to you. You're just doing one particular action. So time went by, and I joined the Holy Order of Mans in San Francisco in 1970 and became a master teacher. And during the ceremony, which is, you know, it's a very solemn ceremony, and you spend almost 6 weeks in what people would call solitary confinement, just alone, bringing yourself closer and closer to the other dimensions more than this one, and then you're tested on what you know about being able to be a multidimensional being. And if you survive that and if you pass the test, et cetera, then you become a teacher. So I was in the middle of this ceremony of becoming a teacher, which, as I said, was very solemn. And when Master Paul got to the part in the ceremony when he said, and your name will be Master Sarah, instead of me, you know, listening and being kind of enthralled with what I was experiencing, the very first thing that came into my mind was, oh, great, now they're not going to remember how to spell it. And later I thought, wow, that was a weird thing to think when you're in this very sacred moment, surrounded in this chapel with all of these people with, you know, the choir singing and the whole bit. So I held that piece for myself for a long time and played with different ways to spell Sarah, and finally decided I'd just spell it with two R's, and that's all I knew to do. Meanwhile, the visions kept coming, but I didn't have any foundation for it. I didn't have something that was saying, this is what's going on. But in one of my visions, I was actually of Jesus, and I was talking to him. And just before the vision was going to go away, he reached out and he looked at me, and he said, you were closer to me than hands and feet. You meant more to me than a wife. And he was gone. And I thought, well, that's, you know, pretty melodramatic, and what does it mean? I don't know. I didn't have any context. So time continues on, and it's back somewhere around, gosh, 2002 maybe, somewhere in there. And I was on the Internet, and as you know how when you're on the Internet surfing, looking for something, if you're doing research, you end up in places that you never believed you would ever end up. And I was on this person's website, some person's website, and they were talking about Mary Magdalene. And in the context of this discussion about Mary Magdalene, there was a little asterisk after her name. And so I dropped down to see what the asterisk was, and it said, S-A-R apostrophe H, Sarah, was Mary Magdalene's daughter. No one ever spells it right. And I thought, oh, my God, years and years ago, I had that same thought. This is the daughter of Jesus. That's what he meant when he said, you're closer to me than hands and feet. And all of a sudden, all the pieces fell into place. Plunk, 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 plunk. And as soon as that happened, I literally physically couldn't move. It was like I was paralyzed. I just sat in the chair. And when I finally started to move, I realized I was really, really weak. So I went on a retreat for several days and just kind of got myself centered again until I could realize what all of this meant to me. And then I started writing the book. So as I'm writing the book, the memories of being Sarah are coming back. And I can't make them come, and I can't force it. All I can do is allow it. And the thing that's been really interesting is every time I thought that, you know, okay, a few more chapters and the book is done, I've literally gotten a phone call from either somebody I don't know or someone I do know that I haven't talked to for like a decade who will say, hi, my name is such and such, and I have a piece for you, and then they'll tell me something about the book. But they don't know that I'm writing the book. And that's how some of the pieces have been coming in through other people. One person called me, and I hadn't talked to him in years, and he said, I just came back, and he lives in California. He said, I just came back from Sedona. I was at a conference there. A woman walked up to me, and she said, and then he told me other things she said, and then she said, you'll know who this needs to go to. And turned around and walked away. And it was one of the pieces that I hadn't gotten for the book yet. So on a multidimensional level, in the realm of all that is, because everything exists everywhere and there really is no space, what's happening is that I have tapped into the archetype of the daughter of Jesus, and the pieces of it are accumulating together into my mind through my mental processes in the way that I receive information. So when people say to me, oh, you think you're the daughter of Jesus, no, I don't think I'm the daughter of Jesus. I am recalling the memories of the daughter of Jesus. And they exist everywhere. Just like, you know, there's a lot of people who say they channel Magdalene or they're Mary Magdalene or they're Mary Magdalene reincarnated or whatever. I had tons of people emailing me and saying, oh, I'm your mother, I'm your this, I'm your that. They're tapping into the archetype of what that person is. So that's really what I'm doing is remembering the memories of it, and something in my multidimensional makeup, my frequency makes it easy for me to receive this information. Yes, I was raised a Catholic. Yes, I always felt close to Jesus and Mary. Did I ever think that he had a daughter? No, of course, because Catholics don't believe that. But it was never one of my focuses, even after I stopped following the Catholic religion. I didn't start focusing on who Jesus' children would be. It simply came for me. So it's very spontaneous. And I'm very thankful for it, and at the same time, all I can do is wait for the pieces to come into place. So that's it in a nutshell.
That's very interesting and also very clear, you know. I like how you explain that it's not that you are somebody else, it's just that you're tapping with some information that's there for you to tap in because of whatever you've lived or whatever your contract is or whatever you it's part of what you have to do, right?
Well, yes, and if I try to avoid it, which I don't, but if I were trying to avoid it, and, you know, the word have to do, you know, kind of makes it sound like if you don't do it, then something bad's going to happen. Well, I would probably be a little uncomfortable if I ignored it. But what happens is things keep popping up. Like, for instance, when I was writing the book, because I'm just sitting there writing, and I'm just letting it unfold, and I'm just letting it come, and without editing it, I'll go back and do all the fancy editing stuff later. I had Mary Magdalene and Seurat and some other people in this boat, and they're going across the Mediterranean, and they're landing in France, and the first thing that happens is that she's greeted by this woman who you would call a gypsy. And there's this beautiful picture of this woman, and I'm describing this woman and how she's dressed. And the woman says to Mary Magdalene, I'll take it from here. And they already know each other. So she takes Seurat to her village, and the story goes on. Well, when I got that piece, I thought, well, that was interesting because I've certainly never thought of that before. Well, it wasn't 6 months later. I was doing a reading for a woman who, you know, I get calls and requests to do readings every day. And so this woman said, would you do a reading for me? Okay, here's the focus. Here's what I want you to read. Da, 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 da. And I go to do the reading, and all of a sudden I'm in this parallel life with her, and she's the gypsy on the beach. And I wasn't even thinking about it. And when I sent that information back to her and I said, here's this information, and this is I got this, she goes, oh, yeah, I know that. So, you know, it's just like all these surprises all the time. And so when you say, you know, do I have to do it? Well, from that standpoint, kind of yes. Because if I don't, if I turn my attention to something else, comes around and meets me and says, oh, I'm over here.
Right, because you're kind of tuned in, right?
Yeah, you're tuned in. Exactly. Yeah, I'm always tuned into it. It's in my name, and that's why I use that name in my name, because it keeps me connected to that vibration all the time. So I'm always open for more information to come to me. And the way the book is turning out, because I always talk to my partner, Philip, about this, he says, it sounds to me like it's going to be a series. And I said, yeah, because there's so much information that has come that there's no way I can make it into one book. I mean, people are only going to read a book for so long, and, a 1,000-page book is not very popular. So the idea, I finally found a cutoff point where I can just say, okay, I guess we'll stop here, and then I can write another book that picks up from there, so that people can actually, get one piece of the story and then say, okay, I've got that. And then, I can take a breath here and live my life a little bit, and then I'll go get the sequel and start reading the sequel.
So oh, my God, I want the book already.
Well, the first half of it's done, and I found an editor, and she's edited it, and she keeps emailing me saying, are you done yet? And I go, no, I'm not finished with the second part yet. So it's going to be easy as far as the technical part of getting it done is concerned. I already have all the people in place. It's me getting the writing finished, and I'm again projecting this into next year, saying, okay, I think I can finish this next year. So hopefully by the summertime it will be done. We will see what happens. We'll see what the powers that be, so to speak, have to say about all of this.
I'm pretty sure you'll be finishing it very, very soon. I'm sure it will be at the start of the year or something.
Yeah, it feels like it. It feels like once the holidays are over and, we've all settled back into our beginning of a new year, that it feels like good writing time. And that's always fun. That's very juicy for me. I love to write. And this is a favorite of mine to write about. So it'll be nummy, very nummy.
That's fun as well. So does any of these memories include any information on Jesus itself? How was he depicted back then?
Well, what I am receiving and how I'm seeing it, and in the first part of the book, there's not a lot about Jesus, because the book is really about Sarah and how she came to know what she knows. And at the same time, is Jesus that floats in and out. And how I am being given the information and how I'm seeing it is that the Bible itself, and I wanted to preface this by saying to those who believe in the Bible who are Catholic or Christian, I am not trying to put down your religion. I'm just telling you how I feel about it. The New Testament was written almost 100 years after Jesus was alive, like 70 years or something like that. Supposedly, and this is what we're told, by people who supposedly got information from someone who was actually there. Now, there's a lot of ifs around all of this, and because the four books of the New Testament that are about Jesus' life are all basically the same with some changes in them depending upon who's writing it or what their focus was, I have, just as a researcher and as a writer, I take this with great skepticism that this is the way it happened. Also because it's been translated so many times, by the time it hit the Greeks, all bets were off as far as how the transliteration actually occurred, so that a word that meant one thing in Arabic actually came out, or Aramaic rather, came out to mean something else in Greek. So all of those stories about Jesus were kind of massaged and created to create the picture that the church would have you believe. What I am seeing Jesus as is very practical and very mystical in a alchemical way, and spending a lot of time in India, spending a lot of time in meditation and learning ancient texts, and not necessarily the Jewish son out there in the desert doing all of the little Jewish things, which to a certain extent I'm sure he did. Yet there is a part of him, and that's the part that I tap into. Even when I'm talking about it right now, I can feel it in my hands. It's like it's almost overwhelming. That is so mystical that when he talks about the Christos, or when he says the Father and I are one, it is from a standpoint of knowing that is so secure that this is the yearning that everybody has. is to be that secure in their own knowing of themselves as source and form. And the church would have you believe that he's the only son of God, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And nothing could be further from the truth. And if the Bible is to be believed, that is not what he said. He said, the Father and I are one. So are you. And when you see me doing what I do, you are going to do this and more because I go before you. I'm showing you the way. Do it this way and it works. And basically what he did was simply to not see what other people saw. So if somebody came up to him and said, I'm blind, he simply noticed that the man believes he's blind, and he took it with his awareness of his presence into the world of all possibilities where everything exists to a place where the man wasn't blind and simply made that be his reality. Now, the man believed in him, believed that he would be able to do something for him, so the man was blind. The same way we can heal right now. This is the same way energy healers, because you're a healer, and if you're really healing somebody, if you're really working with them, you know that you have to see them as whole. So long as you see something there that needs to be fixed, you'll never get away from whatever needs to be fixed in your mind. It has to be a wholeness. And that's actually how Jesus functions, whether the Bible is believed or not. At the same time, what I'm seeing in the story as it's unraveling for me, and I'm writing out Sarah's story, is that she and Jesus, and Mary Magdalene too, but just for the standpoint of the story, she and Jesus were in telepathic communication. So they wanted to communicate together. It was much more like what I was receiving was these quote-unquote visions, which was basically me being in a different time and place, talking to a being who was also in a different time and place, and receiving information in that way. So I'm seeing, from my standpoint, seeing Jesus is very practical, meat and potatoes. Yes, we need to, you know, find out how to travel from point A to point B. Let's not pretend we're going to levitate our way there. And also very, very mystical in the alchemical sense of knowing that the Christos, which is the presence of God in form, was what he really was and still is, because none of us ever really, quote-unquote, die. We simply leave these vehicles. We're always present. We're always everywhere, and he knew that. But that's how God breaks. And that's how he sort of unraveled or accepted his own Christ consciousness, because he knew it. That's something that I really feel is missing in the expression of universal principles as the Christos that people miss. It's not about doing anything. A lot of things, but what you really want to do is to be it. And once you be it, once you are it, then whatever you do is affected by that essence. Does that make sense?
Yes, so what you're saying is that all of us somehow have the same Christ consciousness path.
Exactly. Exactly. It's our heritage. And, you know, I always like to say, I have these little, you know, stories I like to tell, because sometimes some of this stuff is, as my mother would say, bigger than a bread box. You know, it's really hard to wrap your mind around, but just think about it. However you think about God, however you think about Source, all that is, whatever you call it, in the moment of its decision, quote-unquote, to manifest creation, it only had one thing to create with, and that was itself. It couldn't go over and get the clay over there and say, okay, now I'm going to make this world, because it had to manifest clay. So if the only thing it could create from was itself, then everything has to be made of source material, no matter what it looks like, no matter how dense it is. Density is nothing more than a slow frequency of vibration, a slow wavelength. That's all density is. And the faster the frequency, the finer it is. In other words, the harder it is to see or to feel. So every single human being is made of source material, which makes it our divine heritage. We are source and form. And that doesn't mean just that, you know, like people think about their higher self like being in them, or the source consciousness being in you. Your fingernails, your hair, your tongue, your teeth, all of it is made of source. So your heritage is to express that. And what keeps people from expressing it in fact, I just did a movie on this, is basically judgments, opinions, and belief systems that are bought into, and people say, this is real for me, and it keeps them from expressing their heritage. Because as soon as you have a judgment about something, you separate yourself from it. Unless, of course, it's the best chocolate chip cookie in the world, and you don't separate yourself. You want to, you know, osmotically embrace it in all ways. But basically, when you have a judgment about something, you'll say, this is good and this is bad. And the bad thing I don't want, and it belongs over there, and that's, you know, evil, wrong, or whatever you want to call it. And you, in your mind, say, this isn't part of God. This isn't part of Source. That's impossible. If it isn't part of Source, then what is it? It's impossible to be outside of Source, because there is no outside of Source. So within that aspect, everything that you believe, everything that you fear, everything that you're anxious about or you worry about is the separating point between you and your embracing what you come to have as your own birthright, which is to express as the Christos, which is the authentic you.
And how can we recognize that authentic you? How can we recognize this Christ consciousness that we all are?
Well, I think that one of the first things, you know, and it's sometimes easier said than done from that standpoint, because what happens for people is that the mind has put a lock upon what they believe is the truth, that what you and I are talking about right now is sometimes a long reach. So the key to unlocking the door is to realize the essence of you is your truth, and then to apply your free will choice to your authentic truth, which means that, and this is what I teach in my metaphysics classes, you basically have to examine all of your beliefs. When you find out it's somebody else, your parents, or your churches, or your schools, or your government, or your culture, or the peer group, say, this is the way to do things. And many times, if you don't do things this way, there is a repercussion, especially if it's a profession that has rules and laws around it, or it's a religion that says if you don't follow our particular principles, then we're going to execute you. So these beliefs can be very heavily laden with a survival mechanism. And all of this keeps you from understanding the essence of you, because the essence of you doesn't have any of this within it at all. The essence of you is completely clear. I mentioned in my newsletter this last week that on an interview once, the interviewer was asking me, they read my website, and I changed my website since then, but I had this little thing in my bio that said that I came to the earth and remembering both sides of the veil, and they said, well, what does that feel like? What is it like on the other side of the veil? And nobody had ever asked me that question. Usually if I say something like that, people just go, oh, that's nice, and they change the subject. But this person said, you know, what was it like? And I thought, wow, I actually have to answer a question about this. Okay, how can I put this into words? And the first thing that came for me was, it's a place of absolute judgment. Think of what it would feel like to live a life where you have no judgment about anything, and no one judgment about you know that. Now, I'm not going to prefer, you know, macaroons. I'm talking about judgments that say something is right or wrong. Preferring peanut butter cookies and to macaroons is fine until you say, because I prefer peanut butter cookies to macaroons, macaroons are bad. Now you're in judgment. So, you think about state where you have no judgment about anything, all simply is. Doesn't mean you want to take part in everything. Doesn't mean you want to get into a fist fight. But observing the fact that someone's having one is simply observing the fact that someone's having a fist fight. Nothing has to be right or wrong. And knowing that you are held in that same perspective, which is huge for people. No one was judging you. Arrive at that state, you really have to do some self-examination. You really have to let yourself go through parts of your identity that you know are really you and ask yourself why you are not expressing them. Why you are not able to say, this is who I am. This is why, you know, I teach class. I constantly go back to Captain Jack Sparrow in the Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. Because every time something happened to him, that's all he said. Jack Sparrow. That's why I'm not marooned on. That's why you thought I was dead and I'm not dead, because I'm Captain Jack Sparrow. You constantly go to the point of I am the team. And examine the beliefs you have that keep you from doing that fully and completely, not only in society, but in your own mind. So that it is solid. That the thought forms that come up in your self-talk are all about your worth and not your lack of worth, your low self-esteem, or what you're not, or rather what you are. So it's a practice. And believe me, it's infinite. As soon as you start working with this in any way close to what I'm describing, what happens is that the initial covering of what you are comes off really easily. All the things you know about yourself that are really easy to just say, oh, yeah, that's got to go, that's got to go, that's got to go. Oh, don't want that anymore. That's all that stuff's easy. Then we get to the real you. All the stuff that you haven't looked at, the stuff your subconscious has put the lid on and says, you're not going there. This is way scary. And then it begins to feel safe to lift that lid, and all of a sudden you get to address all of the things in your life that you haven't looked at. And sometimes that can be a little bit awkward. And yet it's the only place that's going to go whether we want to or not, because eventually living outside of our own authenticity will become so uncomfortable that we cannot not do it. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it did. So why would you say it is important for us to unravel our own Christ consciousness?
Why is it important to unravel it? Is that what you said?
Yes, for the listeners. Why is it important for everybody to unravel our own Christ consciousness?
Well, important is an interesting word. It's kind of subjective. It's only important if you want to feel as comfortable as you possibly can be being you. If that's not important to you, then it's not important. Eventually, that's what I mean. Eventually, it will be important. Because until you allow yourself, and we're using the words Christ consciousness to mean something. You know, we could also call it spaghetti and mean the same thing. These are just words. Christos, the word Christos is Greek. It means anointing. So you know your own anointing. And your consciousness is what makes you literally aware of being. So you're aware of being this anointed being. If you prefer, you know, dear listener, if you prefer not to know that you are an anointed being, that you are source and form, if you go, oh, whoa, that's way too big for me, fine. Then it's not important. Go be as little as you want to be. Eventually, it's going to become uncomfortable enough, and it might not even be in this lifetime, or the next. But eventually, you're going to say, wow, I am just really tired of living this way. I want to know who and what I am. And that's part of the transformation that's going on the earth right now. And to bring that about, to catalyze it, everything is getting really uncomfortable for everybody. Everyone's looking at all the things that are happening on the earth right now and saying, oh, my gosh, look at the climate. Oh, my gosh, look at, you know, the oil in the Gulf. Look at the cholera in Haiti. Look at the wars in the East. Look at this, look at that. Yeah, it's getting real uncomfortable here. How much more uncomfortable do you want to get before you shift into being aware of what you are? Because I think most people know what the huntress monkey is, where, you know, that enough of one species does something and all of a sudden the whole species knows how to do it. Enough beings accept Christ consciousness on this planet, and then those who aren't paying attention are going to simply have it by default. They cannot not have it, because the species will simply be operating from that standpoint. So one of my students said to me one day, oh, goody, I'll be one of the default people. I'll just catch the last bus. Well, you can be, and no one's going to judge you for it if that's what you want. But at the same time, are you going to be so uncomfortable living your life up until that point that you'll wish you had made a different decision? Because the closer and closer you feel yourself getting to your own authentic anointing, the happier you are, the easier it is to do things. And because you're happy and because things are flowing with you, then things begin to flow with people around you. And then life just becomes really fun. And there isn't the struggle and the challenge and the burdens and the worry and the anxiety that everybody experiences, because it just isn't in your life anymore. So that's important if it's important to you. And if it's not important to you, well, then it's not. And yet I know in my heart of hearts that that deep yearning within every single human is there. And people can't fool me when they say, well, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. Yes, you do. You do too. You just don't want to look there. And that's all right, too. Don't, until you want to. But eventually you will, because it's in you. It's part of you. It's the way we're encoded. And our DNA is made up of it. You can't get away from it.
And what role would you say the judgment play on all this?
Well, as I was saying, since every single moment of your life is being created by you, judgment literally creates your own private hell. Because you begin to, and depending upon what you're judging and depending upon how strong your judgments are, if it's a person who has very strong judgments and biases about how life should be, because life doesn't respond to should and should not. And I'm looking out the window right now, and I'm surrounded by forest and trees and grass. There's no should or should nots in all of this nature I'm looking at. It simply does what it does based upon how it is constructed. And basically, we are invited to do the same thing. Judgments say this should be a certain way and this shouldn't be a certain way. And there's shoulds and should nots, bad and good, right and wrong. And to the degree that you're stuck in that, to that degree, you create hell for yourself because you're really pushing upstream. You're like the salmon trying to go upstream and the water's pushing back down too hard because life doesn't respond to trying to control it. So to the degree that you hold on to your judgment, to the degree that you say life is right, both are right, of life, that's where you're not going to be able to realize yourself. This is our natural state. And you're being unnatural when you're attempting to control something, anything, be it through religion, government, the way you run your home, the way you live your life. There is a sense of, if things don't happen the way I want them to, and this is the way I believe they have to happen, then whatever is going on is wrong, and I'm the right one. So you've separated yourself from everything else that's happening around you, and in that separation you're very uncomfortable, and sometimes people are very alone because of it, because there's nobody there with them. And yet, sometimes we are uncomfortable outside of each other. One of the reasons that I have the absolution ritual on my webpage, because when I was at the Chalice Well in Glastonbury several years ago, I was literally given the absolution ritual in a meditation, and what I heard was only through absolution will you reach the absolute. And I thought, wow, never thought of it that way before. And that's right, because until you absolve, which is really putting back into solution, putting it back into the flow, until you change the energy around what you say you can't forgive or you can't accept, you're saying that over there isn't God. You're separating yourself from that part of God. If you separate yourself from one part of God, you might as well separate yourself from all of it. But you can't. You're constantly divided against God. If you want to be in the Bible, that's what Jesus said when he said, yourself cannot stand. If you are serving more than one master, you cannot keep a firm foundation. You have to decide if you're going to believe in the illusion of this dual reality or not. I can't say, I've got my physical life and then I've got my spiritual life. And they're not actually, I don't see them together, you know. So what that says to me is you have your physical life. Because if you really have your spiritual life, then your physical life is your spiritual life. If you see them as divided, then you're divided against yourself. So any of the attributes or aspects that I'm talking about create division between you and the unraveling, as you're putting it, of your Christ consciousness, the unveiling of your Christ consciousness. Because you can't see it. You can't see your Christ consciousness. Because the filters you put on your vision have already separated you from it. Some aspects, it isn't even there for you. It doesn't exist for you. You're too busy being sure that things happen the way you think they're supposed to happen. You can't attune yourself to the conscious awareness that is the one consciousness. It is actually the state.
So you were talking about having control over our conscious actions. What about our involuntary responses? Do we have some control over that also?
Well, yeah, there are some. Like, for instance, your heartbeat and your respiration are involuntary. Okay, I mean, you're going to breathe whether you're thinking about it or not. And at the same time, you can control your breath. Think about birthing a baby. You know, if you breathe really fast and you pant and it helps you to push. Or if you are attempting to climb a mountain and you breathe in a certain way, it makes it easier. Or you're doing meditations or you're doing mantras or whatever. So there are involuntary aspects of our bodies that we do have control over. Digestion is involuntary, and to a certain degree you have some control over it. You can eat slower. You can eat in a restful atmosphere and help your body digest. So from that aspect, those involuntary mechanisms, to a certain degree, can be controlled when you're aware of them. Those aren't quite as important as your voluntary actions, because your voluntary actions are what is tied to free will, and it's your free will that makes the choice of how you're going to create your life. So you can make a decision that everything in your environment, in your domain, that is voluntary for you, your thoughts, your words, your actions, are going to radiate Christos, that is you, and keep that first and foremost in your mind, so that as you begin to speak, if you're going to say something that doesn't align with your personal perspective of how the Christos is held, then you will begin to realize that you are saying something or acting in a way that is actually removing your conscious awareness from embodying the Christos. We have all of these voluntary actions, words, and responses that we can work with to literally communicate the fact that we know ourselves as the Christos. And I don't mean going around being, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Goody Two Shoes and, you know, trying to appear really holy. I'm not talking about that. Aspect. You know, people have all the pictures, you know, with the halo and the light rays and all that stuff. Okay, great. That gives a connotation of being sacred. But he was a man, like I'm a woman. And the Christos is embodied in our forms in that way. So that as we express, the expression of the Christos. Or a pedestal or anything that is plutonium. People come to find that they're not exhibiting the Christos or attempting to radiate or respond to the Christos, they're trying to clear their So if you really want to express this Christos, if you want to know yourself as God's form, all you have to do is be consciously aware in each moment, like being the observer, you know, observing your words, observing your actions, observing your thoughts. See, what's going? What are you saying? What am I doing? And why am I doing it? unless it feels like a pulse, unless it's just flowing out of you, like the words that I'm speaking right now, like I'm not thinking about anything I'm saying, I'm just opening my mouth and letting it come forth because it just comes out of me. It's flow. It's coming from source. That, how what you're going to say and how you're going to say it because you want a certain impression to be made, not just authentic. You always have this, you know, checkpoint with yourself. It's very handy and perfect system for catching yourself in these moments. It's very precise. You know immediately you're not being you. You can feel it. They didn't see you, capital Y, of you.
So if we have control over our voluntary choices, actions, you know, thoughts, then we can voluntarily choose our own identity or how we want to express ourselves in the world. Yes?
Yes. Exactly. And this is where I talk about being really vulnerable. You know, lots of times people will say to somebody, will tell me something, you know, whatever it is. They'll unveil some secret about themselves to me. And they'll say, and it usually has to do with somebody else. Nine times out of ten, it's something about them and someone. And they'll say, well, what do you think I should do? And I'll say, well, what you just told me, go tell them. Which usually scares people to death. Because they don't want to be seen in their vulnerability. They want to talk to me, who's supposed to help give them an answer about something. And this is usually within our classroom format when people start working with energy and they realize that the energy they're sending out is not the energy they want to send out. And they want to tell me what's going on and then have me give them a little script or help them write a little script to take back to the other person, the other situation, the other environment, so they can reconstruct it the way they want it to be, and that's the opposite of what needs to be done. What needs to be done is that they take exactly the words they're saying to me and they go and talk to the other person and say, this is what's going on with me, the law. And I call it showing your underbelly, like an animal, like a dog. If they really are trusting you or they're willing to give themselves up, they'll roll over on their back and show their underbelly where they're the most vulnerable, where they can die the fastest. And that's what we are all needing to do constantly with ourselves in every situation. And when people allow themselves to do that, they will begin to realize that the only voluntary action that they really want is that, the truth of them. So in that, the language is never, this is going on for me because you did this. It's, this is going on for me. Let me tell you how you're taking part in this because of what I'm experiencing. And we keep it with ourselves. The other person is only a mirror and a catalyst for creating in you whatever you're experiencing. And that goes for everything. I mean everything. Nothing is an exception to what I just said. Absolutely nothing. Because that's the way physics works. What goes out comes back. Period. End of subject. So everything that we want to see coming towards us has to leave us and go from us first for it to come back into us. So if we want to see the world as free and conscious and aware and loving, we need to let that fly in every single circumstance. And sometimes that doesn't come out as very Hallmark greeting card-ish. Because sometimes you need to say to a person, hey, you know what? You're lying to me. You know you're lying to me, and I'll tell you why you're lying to me. Here. And you just lay it out because you're being you. People won't do that. They'll play games. And when we allow ourselves to be absolutely 100% authentic with ourselves, every single voluntary action follows that format. And we are totally vulnerable because we're not hiding anything. We are hiding nothing, no matter what the other person thinks about it. If they don't like it, that's their problem. You're not here to make people happy. You're not here to take care of people. You're not here to make sure everybody's okay. You're not here to help the world. You're here to manifest yourself. when you're doing that and you're doing it 100% as you know yourself to be, boy, there's no holds barred. All the bets are off because anything can happen. Miracles. Miracles. I just don't understand how they happened. But things happen that are so undeniably real, even though you can't believe how they happen, that
And what role would you say ego plays on all of this?
Oh, support your ego. It gets such a bad rap. It's as though the ego shouldn't exist or something, the way people talk about it. Ego personality is just a situation. Ego personality is who I am as Tony, you are as Luciana, and each of the listeners, you know, say your name. That's your ego personality. And it is how you are expressing as Source in this form. Because on planet Earth, because there's bazillions of places where you could be besides this one, because you're on planet Earth, you're living in a dual atmosphere, which means electromagnetically it's a plus and a minus charge. Things have polar opposites. We have, you know, light and dark, day and night, up and down, all those kinds of things. Within your construct, wavelength everything knows what a wavelength is. Just think of a wave. You know, there's a wave. Da 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 da. The length of it is that's the wavelength. How many times the up and down happens is the frequency. Up our frequency, we would not have to acknowledge to ourselves. We would walk through the walls because the walls would not be there to us as a wall. And yet, that's not how we are participating in life right now, right? What we're experiencing right now is very solid. So, in that solidity, in this dual world, the ego personality feels like survives. It has to make it work. It has everything that it believes it needs. It is the top dog on the heap. That it's winning. And to do that, pull out all the top. It will do anything to survive as a separation because it feels like to the ego personality. And if it doesn't do that, it's going to be killed, which really means going to I'll fall in love with the beloved within or be absorbed into the whole and that it will no longer exist. And nothing could be farther from the truth. When you are, quote-unquote, absorbed into the whole, you still know yourself as you. You're also the whole. You know both you and the whole. But the ego doesn't know or puts up tight self, effort, everything, because it feels like if it does that, that it will remain safe. And after a while, what happens in life, as you mature and as life goes on, you realize it doesn't work. Because you never feel safe. You're always trying to do one more thing to feel safe. You get your IRA, you get a secure job, you get a house, you lock the floors, you get alarms, and it's one more thing, just one more thing, and I'll feel safe, and you never feel safe. It never happens. You still go to bed at night and look in the dark wondering if someone's going to come and get you or whatever it is that scares you because fear doesn't ever make you feel secure. The only security that exists is letting it all go. So the only security you have is knowing that you are actually the whole. And that there isn't security here. I always think the only truth of Earth is that there is no security here. You really don't have to die. That's a belief system. You really don't have to pay taxes. I mean, we're because taxes are not for sure. What is for sure is the fact that you're always still insecure here until stay in separation. We're right back into letting everything literally flow. And I know it's really easy to say, and it's really hard to do, because your mind comes up and goes, well, wait a minute. What about? The laundry list of all the things that you need to stay separate from because of, and then there's another laundry list. As soon as you dissolve all of that, your mind will create another one, and that's endless. Until you simply say, I really don't care how many times you tell me I have to be separate, I refuse. You can come along for the ride and see what this is like, and then all of a sudden it caves in, and you're free. But once you have that freedom, you'll never go back. Never. No. It is possible to do that. Jason, I invite you.
So what would you say are belief systems? For the listeners, why is it that we need belief systems? Do we actually need them?
We don't really need them. And yet even saying that you don't have a belief system is a belief system. So basically, a belief system is whatever set of constructs you have in your life by which you run your life. From, and it's not just about religion or God. It's about, you know, what you should eat, how often you should exercise, what clothes you should wear, how often you should bathe, brush your teeth. I mean, all of these are beliefs. Because basically, if none of those beliefs were adhered to, by and large, short of the belief that you shouldn't stand in front of a racing train, most of the beliefs that you have, if you didn't do them, nothing would happen. Life goes on, which is always a great surprise. Kind of drop out because you're sick and you realize the world kept turning. So you believe certain things need to be a certain way to maintain a particular type of life that you are attempting to maintain, and that's your belief system. So no, we don't need them. But as you allow yourself not to so much get rid of your belief as to shift them. So for instance, you believe that, you know, you have to wear orange clothes because it makes you feel good. And all of a sudden you try wearing green clothes, and you go, oh, wow, I feel completely different. Now I have a new belief. I have a belief I can wear green clothes, too. It's about changing your beliefs so that they more mirror what you really are. And then it goes from belief to knowing, because you're actually, excuse me, you're actually experiencing it. Something that somebody else has told you. You don't brush your teeth twice a day, you're going to be happy. No. It comes from the medical perspective. You might enjoy brushing your teeth twice a day, or maybe you don't, but it really doesn't have to do with cavities. That has to do with what you eat and how soft your teeth are. So what you want to do is look at where your beliefs come from and decide whether they're really yours or not. Or did somebody else give them to you? My mother used to tell me that if I washed my hair when I had my period, I would have a bad menopause. Where in the world did that come from? I mean, you know, come on. And man, let me tell you, in my mother's house, if you were having your period, you did not wash your hair. Or there was hell to pay.
You're kidding me.
Oh, no. I mean, there was just, she lived and died by this stuff. So, literally. So, what I'm saying is look at where your beliefs come from, because anything that is a belief is just as silly as thinking that one. Unless it is something that you know, that you experience yourself. If you really, truly experience something that is really true for you, then it is your knowing. It's no longer a belief. And your knowing can be limitless. It can be infinite. It can be as far as you want to think in every direction. Think of a balloon expanding endlessly. That is available to your consciousness. At every place you have a tightness around something that has to be a certain way, you keep the balloon from expanding. Stop expanding here. No, we're not going there. Just let it expand. take in all that you can possibly take in. Question everything, absolutely everything, and decide what's real for you. Then you open the door to realizing that you create your own life and that you are God-informed, that you are the Christos, that you are the anointed, quote-unquote, Son of God. You are this creative spark, and you don't have to believe or do anything that doesn't feel authentic to you. And everyone on this earth would do that. We would have heaven on earth. Because all of the things we're experiencing right now, we would not be experiencing.
So how would you, what would you say to the listeners if they would like to start observing themselves for the Christ that they are? Is there anything keeping them from knowing themselves as it?
There really isn't, except what's in their mind, as we've been talking about. I have on my website an initiation into the presence of your essence that was literally given to me. I mean, I experienced it one day and thought, oh my gosh, I know what this is. And found that I can, quote unquote, transmit this very easily long distance. And I have a CD with information about it, and I have support material that I send to people so that they have something to work with after they experience the presence of your essence. And what it does is it opens up your awareness to yourself as source in form. And what I have found, because I've done this now with hundreds and hundreds of people, and most of the people have come back to me and said basically the same thing. Everybody has a different experience, but basically there's been one common thread throughout the whole thing, and that is everyone's looking at me differently now. Everyone's treating me differently. What is this? And what it is that you are beginning to see them as God-informed. So they have really no choice but to see you as God-informed, because in your seeing them as God-informed, you can create that vibration within them. You literally change the way they see them. And it's absolutely awesome. It's been awe-inspiring. And I've done it with some people who I've worked with before who have very specific beliefs, some of them very tight beliefs, people who are Muslim, people who come from India, who have very specific beliefs about how life should be, and who say, okay, I'm going to do this because I trust you, but I don't know if anything's going to happen. One fellow afterwards, I always call afterwards, check in, and I said, how are you doing? And he said, I cannot speak. Later. And he was absolutely enthralled with where he was, what he found, even though his skepticism was 100%. So this essence of reading capitalized. It's meaning for you to do it. I offer this to you, and if you don't want to do it, I mean, that's fine, but I'm still telling you this is there, waiting to be catalyzed by you, so that you experience life as God in form, as the Christos, and that's the only way you experience it. And everything then becomes part of that in your day-to-day life.
Because it goes two ways, right?
Yes, exactly. It goes two ways, exactly. You send it out and it comes back to you. Exactly.
So for the listeners, is there anything you would like to add?
Well, yes. I invite you to take yourself to what I call the edge is not okay. That's where all of this lives. People are always asking, you know, oh, I want to take your class. I want you to take me to the edge. And I go, no, you don't. You just want to take my class and learn something. You don't really want to go to the edge, because the edge means you're going to go inside yourself where it doesn't feel okay, where you feel insecure, because that's the last place to find out you can fly. Who wants to jump off the cliff if they're not sure they can fly? And the only way you're going to find out if you can fly is by jumping off the cliff. So I ask you, take yourself, whatever it is, to that place that is not okay within you, and invite the Christos to show you what you really are. and then just open yourself up and let it come.
That sounds beautiful. Yeah.
Yes,
and actually, I will do it. I will do it tonight.
Good.
In my night meditation, I will include that as well.
Oh, wonderful. That would be lovely. Lovely.
I know. So I wanted to send you a big, big hug and say thank you from all of us, you know, from all the people that's listening right now, from all the people that will listen. As you know, guys, you can download this from our Blog Talk Radio main page. You can also download it from Facebook or Twitter, and you can share it with those you love. This is, I think, the enlightening information that will help many, many people as the days go by. So I want to thank you again, Tony, and send you a big, big hug from here.
Oh, yes, me too. Hugs back. Hugs to everybody. Giant group hug.
There you go. Group hug, everybody.
Group hug. Pine Kong. Group hug.
I love you, girl.
You.
Hope I can talk to you soon. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody.